Welcome to UFO Think Tank Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, my friends. It is I, Alejandro Rojas, and I am so happy to be here with you today. So, UFO Think Tank Radio, we are sponsored by UFODailyNews.com, the website you have to go to for your latest news. And one thing I wanted to mention was that we have a new writer, and I'm so very grateful to Robert Cole, who is now going to be helping out with writing some stories. So this is really cool. He's also going to be a science advisor for the show and for the website. He is actually a assistant professor at the Medical University of South Carolina, and he is trained as a cell physiologist, a biochemist, and a biophysicist. So very cool. We are very happy to have him on board on the website. And I could probably use some more help. So if any of you out there are kind of like, it's not like it's rocket science, even though Mr. Cole, of course, is a professor. He'll be writing some bigger feature pieces, but mostly what I'm doing here, as you see, it's a kind of a news aggregate for UFO news and for astrobiological type of news stories, exoplanets, this kind of thing going on. So it's really news bits and pieces that we're putting on there, as well as feature stories when we get the time and when we can. But it's really a news source. So, UFO Daily News, trying to get at least one story up there a day. And, of course, if you go to the UFO news feed, you're going to find multiple stories every day, because that's where it's kind of a link to, well, it's a display of my Twitter feed, which has tons of stories going up all the time. So you can be up to the date with the latest and greatest, and there are a lot of stories, and we'll be covering those in just 1 minute. But first, I want to tell you about my guest tonight. The guest is Margie Kay, and she's a really neat lady. She is the Assistant State Director for Missouri MUFON. We've had Debbie Ziegelmeyer on before. She's the director, and we talked a little bit about this UFO wave, but that was months ago when it was happening. This was a UFO wave that happened late last year in October. So we're going to have Margie on to talk in more detail in hindsight about that UFO wave, but we're also going to talk about the many interesting things that she is doing otherwise. She has a magazine, and she has her own radio show. She's had her own, we'll ask her about how she got into this. She does paranormal research, and she's also really into remote viewing. In fact, she says she has helped solve over 40 cases assisting law enforcement to, like, find lost people and stuff. So very cool. We're going to talk to her about all of that. This should be terribly, terribly interesting, and I think you're going to love it. However, before all that, one more thing, and you're probably going to hear about this, you know, from here until October, but I don't think you're going to mind, because this is really exciting. And that is the Cosmic Exploration Conference. I told you a little bit about this last week, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more this week. This is really exciting. Not only do I have a PhD on board to help me with UFO Daily News, but I've put together this conference. It's going to be more credible, mainstream type of stuff. Mainstream friendly is what I'm calling it. Kind of more mainstream acceptable. The reason why is that I think there's a gap here. There's a gap between us and UFO researchers and other researchers and science and mainstream media. And I think there's room for that gap to be filled, because there are very many credible people into this stuff. I had a professor on a few months ago or a few weeks ago talking about this stuff. We had an engineer last week talking about this stuff. So that's just a tip of the iceberg. We've had other PhDs on the show. So that's the whole idea behind this conference. I think it's going to be new and different, and I know a lot of you will be really excited about this. So far, I've got a few mainstream journalists on board, and I already have four PhDs on board to speak at this conference in October. It's the first weekend in October. Tropicana Hotel, this place is beautiful. It's just renovated. And yes, I'm talking about the Tropicana in Las Vegas, Nevada, right in the middle of the strip. Pools, palm trees, just all the beauty and splendor that you could imagine. So it's a wonderful place. And this is going to be groundbreaking. This is going to be incredible. In fact, there's a local museum that's backed by the Smithsonian who's going to be helping out with this. So this is going to be something that hasn't been done before. And we're going to start a new tradition, and we're going to close that gap and, start or continue the work that many have done to bring this subject so it's more palatable and more comfortable for the mainstream to talk about and for mainstream scientists to talk about. And, I think it's important that we get them involved so we can hopefully encourage some organizations, scientific organizations, to look at this stuff. So early October, it's going to be probably less than any other big conference like this out there. So you're going to be very pleased with the pricing when I get that out. And hopefully I'll have the website up in a week or two and more details about who the speakers are. But I just want to whet your palate and get you excited about this right now, because this is going to be a lot of fun. I know you all are going to love it. And I think it's just important for the field because, we want to move this forward. Moving the show forward, why don't we go ahead and get into the news, because there's a lot of it. And we'll start with some of the stories from UFODailyNews.com. In fact, these are the ones that you're going to find on the front page, because you'll find all of these stories we talk about on the site. But I don't know if I talked about this last week, but it's really cool, because this is the SpaceX CEO talking about why he started SpaceX. If you're unaware of who they are, they're the commercial spaceflight company that has actually got a contract with NASA. And in fact, they're going to be flying their space pod, their space module called the Dragon, to the space station on May 7th is when it's planned to launch right now. This is going to be a historic moment, because it's going to be the first commercial spacecraft to go fly out there and connect with and to become part of the NASA program. So this is the beginning of commercial spaceflight. And, of course, what's exciting about that is that commercial spaceflight is the first step towards you and I, my friends, flying in space. Perhaps when I am an old man, I will be able to put on my iPod, put on some jams, and fly to space on a little trip with my grandkids, going to a space hotel. And of course, by then, the iPod's going to be old. They're going to be like, "Grandpa, you're embarrassing us. Why are you wearing the iPod?" Because, I go, "We'll put them flash drives in our brain," or something like that. But anyway, this is kind of neat, because in an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes, they talked about why he started SpaceX. And here's what his answer. His name is Elon Musk. Hopefully I'm saying his name right. And he said, "I think it's important that humanity become a multi-planet species. I think most people would agree that a future where we are a spacefaring civilization is inspiring and exciting, compared with one where we are forever confined to Earth until some eventual extinction event. That's really why I started SpaceX." I'm not sure if that's how he said it, but it would have been more dramatic if he had. Regardless, those were his words. So how cool is that? He's thinking about a spacefaring civilization, which probably is important. I mean, if You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So wouldn't that be interesting if one day we are occupying many planets? I feel sorry for those planets because we're not treating this one very good. Speaking of not being treated very good, Anderson Cooper, and I know I had tipped you off that this was going to happen, but Anderson Cooper had some alien abductees and UFO researchers. The Pennsylvania director of MUFON, John Ventry, was on the show along with a couple young women. Very attractive, I think I might add. We're on the show talking about their experiences. And on my story on the website, I've got a couple video clips of what was going on there. And it was interesting. I didn't catch the whole show. I've only seen these clips. But, you know, Anderson Cooper was just kind of skeptical of the whole thing. And I guess at the end, according to what I've read, you know, he asked for a show of hands to who believes, he put it, who believes UFOs are of extraterrestrial origin, I believe is the way he put it. And barely anybody in the audience raised their hand. So that was unfortunate. Interesting enough, there was a poll done by CNET this week, and you can find this story online. And they did a poll themselves. Do you believe in alien UFOs? In this poll, so far over 4,000 people had voted, and 49% say, yes, I think we've been visited by extraterrestrials. 23% have said no, every sighting can be explained scientifically. 6% said, believe it, I've experienced it personally. 18% said, I'm undecided, some stories sound more plausible than others. And 4% said other. So I guess they had some other theory about what might be going on. The interesting thing is, I don't know if it's just because more UFO people would look at this story, but 50%, you know, much higher than the percentage in the Anderson Cooper crowd had said that. Another story, and our first contribution by the esteemed Robert Kolb, is a story on the billions of possibly habitable worlds. Kind of old news, I know, where the scientists keep talking about habitable worlds. There's more and more evidence that there's life out there. There's life on other planets. We're finding more and more planets all the time. But their numbers get more and more astounding all of the time. This one is from a university in France. And they're saying that they claim many new livable planets may exist based on a survey they've done of red dwarf stars. And they estimate that 41% of these dim stars could be hiding planets suitable for life. And this then translates into this estimate that there could be billions of habitable lives out there, or planets out there. In fact, one of the stories said there's more habitable planets than stars or something like that. I mean, it's just this story has really spun out to the numbers being incredible, which is funny because on top of that, there has been some scientists that came out this week also. I don't even have this story on the site. I probably have it in the news feed. Saying that he thinks it's a long shot, that people are just being optimistic when they're talking about finding life. Never going to happen. No other life out there. And it's just this guy is completely contrary to what everybody else is saying. It's almost like this guy is a laughingstock. This guy is a nut. I mean, things have flipped that much where the skeptical people who say, there's no other life out there, they're more and more the minority, where more and more scientists are coming out saying, there is more life out there than we ever could have imagined. And, of course, last week we talked about that scientist who believes that the Viking mission, some of the data that came back from that, probably shows that there was life. So it's looking good that there may be life on our closest neighbor out there, our next closest neighbor, Mars. So it's getting more and more exciting every day, people. And, of course, These are all the stories that you can see on UFO Daily News. Some of the other stories of interest this week that are in the news feed are this one about the Pine Bush Festival. So there's a Pine Bush UFO Festival that goes on, and it looks like it's been doing pretty well. This was last weekend, and people were real excited, and they have parades and everything. Of course, it's lots of people dressed up like aliens and with aliens. It's kind of more about the fun of aliens, like the Roswell Festival, which is really interesting to me because I've been to Roswell in this festival atmosphere. And, you know, it's more interesting for someone like us or some of you who feel that, you know, we probably have been visited here, and these alien masks we wear, there's so many people that report this type of creature that they're probably here, and here we are with these masks and having fun, and it's just an interesting time, certainly for humanity, in that we seem to possibly be making this transition and dealing with the idea that there is life out there and possibly intelligent life that has visited us for many years and interacted with us, and how we deal with it. I think people always want to have fun and always try to look at things in a fun way, even if it's something they're uncomfortable with. And I don't see that as bad. Of course, it doesn't help bring credibility, but it does help make people think about this stuff. That's why I'm putting together the conference. There's other things you have to do to bring credibility to the subject, to bring these people out there who have something where, you know, scientists and things can take and run with. Leslie Kane's book, of course, is an example of that. And Lee Spiegel's writing on the Huffington Post is another example of that. In fact, he has a story out this week on UFOs over Russia. So they've been seeing UFOs over Russia, and the UFO or the news papers out there have been writing about it, including the Moscow Times. They've written about UFOs being seen over St. Petersburg. There's a few videos on this story that Lee has on the Huffington Post about lights being seen around an airport. And I guess this activity happened April 9th through the 11th, where people were seeing lots of strange lights. And authorities haven't come out to say what was going on or to speak on this subject, although there have been rumors, as there always are, that local army officials hinted that the activity was some sort of training exercise. But one Russian scientist of the Pulkovo Observatory outside of St. Petersburg, He went a little further, and he said, "Aliens look at us as if we are idiots, undeveloped people. Perhaps they have fenced us in with their own sort of screen for the whole galaxy and are sending warning signs to hundreds of billions of stars where that the civilization near the dwarf star, which we call the sun, is dangerous." So maybe. I mean, that would be wise if they are to be warning people. But that's what the scientists had to say about these sightings. Very interesting stuff going on there. Now, I like this next story. I know a lot of you aren't the biggest fans of Seth Shostak, who is the guy who runs SETI. I personally am. I mean, I've heard this guy speak. He's so exciting. He's so compelling when he's talking about how there's got to be life out there, and he's very witty, and he just really draws you in, and you think, wow, science is cool, dude, you know, when you hear him talk. And I thought this was cool. Of course, he is skeptical when it comes to UFOs, but he wrote a story in the Huffington Post, a blog, just like me, he's a blogger on the Huffington Post, very elite group of some of the best minds, these Huffington Post bloggers. Anyway, Mr. Shostak wrote a story called The UFO Bestiary. And in it, he's talking about UFOs. And the very first sentence of the second paragraph is, allow me to first note that this is a phenomena worthy of attention. And this paragraph is about how he does believe that UFOs are an important topic, and it is something that's worthy of our attention, like he says, something to look at. So that's the first time I've seen him say anything like that. To me, that's really exciting. Perhaps he's opening his mind. I know for a fact there are people around him with open mind that believe in this stuff, and people who have communicated with him about the importance of UFO research. Now, he does talk about how he gets a lot of weird correspondence from people who just really argue with him and call him bad names and stuff. But his bottom line is that, I'll read this last paragraph, this last couple of sentences. The fact is, if you're certain that our planet is hosting alien visitors, the way to gain acceptance for your point of view is to prove it, not insist that the problem lies with third parties. The blame game is a cop-out. And you know what? I kind of agree with him in a way. And hopefully you don't get too pissed at me for saying that. But my point being that it is hard work. Doing this show, the MUFON people who are investigating, it's a lot of work to get out and do that kind of thing. And then to get it in front of the people is even more harder. You know, talk to Leslie Kane about how difficult her book was and the hours that Lee Spiegel spends, or any of these other researchers. Kevin Randall, who we've had on the show, Margie Kay, who we have tonight, every one of my guests, they're spending hours and hours of time and money to get this out. I'm spending hours and hours of time and money on this conference that we're doing. So it's like, I agree that it takes a lot of hard work. And a lot of these people who just send emails blasting people, saying, you know, you're not paying attention to this, you're not doing that. We've got to work a little harder, I think. And that's what we're doing. So we just got to keep our nose to the grindstone, keep working. And I am positive, and maybe I'm naive, probably some of you think that way, but I think that if we keep our nose to the grindstone, really keep working on this, that we will get to a point where it will be okay to study scientifically this phenomena. And I think once we get more resources thrown at this, like SETI and has to do what they're doing, then I think we'll make some more ground and we will get that evidence, those smoking guns, or at least some of you feel there is already enough evidence out there. We'll get that in front of the public. Wired has written a story, and I think this is from the UFO Congress, because I remember, yeah, it was. This photographer was taking pictures of people, and they're kind of weird pictures, to be honest. But he's taking these close-up pictures of different people at the Congress, people who are believed to be alien abductees. And he wrote a little story. It's kind of just a picture thing where he's got pictures of these people and writes a little bit about their story. So Wired posted this, and it's kind of a long story. So I thought that, of course, was pretty interesting. And then finally, or no, second to finally, because there's another big story. Portland wrote about this upcoming Pine Bush conference they have that's related to the Trent, Michigan sightings in 1950. There's a couple who took some UFO photographs, and these were actually examined during the Condon Committee examinations to UFOs at the University of Colorado in Boulder. These were examined by their scientists, who said these weren't a hoax. This is actually some object out in the distance. You know, this wasn't a trick. And so those photos have spawned their own festival. People are looking at this idea of having festivals. So that's upcoming. And finally, I just wanted to talk about, you know, this kind of exciting prospect, which is that there are a lot of people, including James Cameron and Google, the founders of Google, who are putting money into actually going out and mining asteroids to examine, you know, how profitable that can be. So all of this stuff that, you know, is in sci-fi, or we grew up in sci-fi, is starting to become a reality where they're looking into actually going out there and mining asteroids. So think of that, not being a coal miner's daughter, an asteroid miner's daughter. Being an asteroid miner's daughter living on a colony on Mars. That's the future, people. Get ready for it. We've got a wonderful interview with Margie Kay, and let us, without further ado, get into that interview. I am very happy to have the Assistant State Director for Missouri MUFON, Margie Kay, on the line. Hello, Margie.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
I'm great.
Good, good. So you're a busy person. You have your own radio show. You do other paranormal investigations. So you keep yourself really busy, huh?
Yes, I sure do. It keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of interest in the paranormal and UFO fields. Been doing that for over 30 years. And it's interesting. It's never a dull moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're one of those people where you look at the list of everything they do, and they're like, how does this one person do all of this?
Well, it's right now it's a little overwhelming because of the number of UFO sightings in the greater Kansas City area. Normally, it's not too bad. I've got assistants that help me, too.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into that. But I wanted to start off with at least how you got involved with all of this. What inspired you to join MUFON and become a UFO investigator?
Well, I think like many UFO investigators, I had my own experiences. And I had my own sightings early on in my 20s, and that got me interested in figuring out what's going on. I had one spectacular sighting in 1986 in Seattle. I lived there for a short period of time, and I was with my brother and my two daughters, and we went out to watch the meteor shower in August. I think it's the Leonid meteor shower at that time. I'm not sure. But we went out to a very, very dark farmland area north of Seattle, Washington, where it was very dark, and suddenly saw this object going across the sky that looked like a satellite. I was absolutely certain it was a satellite. And then it stopped. It just stopped. And another one came along the same path and looked like it joined with it. Of course, at that distance, you can't really tell, but it stopped at the same location. And then three more followed. So five total of these objects did the same thing in the same path. And when the fifth one got to that point, they all turned at a 90-degree angle and took off at what I'd call light speed. And at that point, we all knew we were not looking at satellites.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how I got interested in it.
So how did the group react? Because sometimes, as you know, a group of people can have a sighting like this, but everybody seems to go away with something different.
Well, we all reacted in the same way. We all just kind of screamed and said, oh, no, and grabbed our blankets and jumped off of the car and got into the car and just took off. That was our reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all agreed on what we saw, even the kids, and we just wanted to get out of there.
Wow, interesting. Now, at this point, had you been doing other paranormal investigation yet?
Sure. I started having paranormal experiences as a child and also realized early on that I was psychic and I had other abilities that people around me didn't. And I had very unusual experiences starting at a young age. And by the time I was 15 years old, I was in investigation mode and looking for answers and doing research and reading a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into that. And actually, these aspects of your life I didn't know about until recently when you had sent some information. I had known of you because the state director in Missouri, Debbie, I know well, and she's talked about you, and I've seen you referenced in their stuff and on the web through MUFON. But I didn't know about the psychic side where you actually work with law enforcement.
Yes, I've done that for a number of years. I've worked on over 40 cases, probably 45 by now, assisting with missing persons and unsolved homicide cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that with I've done that with detectives nationwide and private investigators.
So they're open to this idea, I guess.
Well, some are. Some are not. Where I happen to live in Independence, Missouri, near Kansas City, I was unable to assist with two very high-profile cases. Actually, now that I think of it, three or four high-profile cases worth missing persons, and they did not want to talk to me about it. But usually what happens is somebody will hear about me through someone else, through a friend, and then the detective will call me and say, I need your help, but I can't let my boss know about this, or, you know, whatever. And I'll say, sure, I don't care. You don't even use my name. I don't care. Just tell me what you need, and I'll help them. And I do that at no charge.
Wow, that's interesting. So it is initiated by the police officers.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when it comes to why I always think that's interesting, because I'm fascinated with all areas of the paranormal, is that, of course, typically law enforcement are very resistant when it comes to UFOs, but they, for instance, sometimes seek you out. It seems as though they are less resistant, and maybe it's more related to doing their jobs, to using psychics at times.
Well, I it just depends on the person. I've talked to law enforcement that's very interested in finding out about UFOs because they had their own sighting, or, you know, if they've had their own experience, then they're in a much more open-minded position. They will seek me out then, which is, you know, it's happened recently, and we've even had some police officers join our Kansas City MUFON group.
Great.
Because of that.
And that's recently, you're probably referring to these big waves of sightings that have been happening in the last few years.
Yes. When I came on board as an official MUFON investigator here in Kansas City about 3 years ago, it was pretty quiet. But in early 2011, in April, that's when things just really started heating up and increasing in the greater Kansas City area. And by October of 2011, during that month only, we had 87 sighting reports in Kansas City alone.
Wow.
Had some major, major events and multiple, you know, mass witness sightings.
Wow, interesting. Is it, can we go through that right now, like how it started, what were the first sightings, and where, and the nature of those sightings, and move across the time?
Sure. On October the 3rd, I received my first, well, on the 4th, received notice that there were some sightings on the 3rd. And I checked into those, and most of them were orbs or glowing balls of light in the Lee's Summit and Raytown area. And then on the 4th, And just to add to just this timeline of strangeness, the early morning of the 4th is when the this famous case of the missing baby Lisa, that's when that occurred. That was early morning hours of the 4th. And then on the 4th, we got hit with many, many sighting reports for that evening. And in investigating this, what we found was some very strange things going on at the same time. The B-2 bomber was flying over Kansas City at 8:15 p.m. The a flying team, which is an experimental flying team, doing a test run over the Chiefs Stadium, left Lee's Summit Airport, flew over Raytown, over the Chiefs Stadium for a few minutes, and then traveled on I-70, went back to 291 Highway and into the Lee's Summit Airport. And this group was very, it's a new thing. It's where six or seven small airplanes are lit up with these flashing strobe lights all over them. And they fly in very tight formation at night. So they have to be very skilled pilots. And it's kind of, you know, stunt flying sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put all of this together at a little bit of a distance, it looks like one giant craft with these flashing lights all over the place. And so we had just, I don't know how many people stopped on I-70 for, there was a wreck, and we don't know if the wreck was caused by that or not. So all these people were stopped on I-70, standing out of their cars and pointing at this and, you know, thinking it was a UFO.
I remember that because it was in the news quite a bit, and then it was you all, MUFON, who discovered who it was, and the guy seemed to be kind of, he thought he was funny. He thought it was funny that people took him for UFOs. He didn't take it too serious.
Well, he did. Debbie Ziegelmeier is the one who talked to him, and he took it more seriously when he realized that they might have been causing accidents.
Mm.
But I spoke to the controller at the Lee's Summit Airport, and he gave me information about what time they left and what time they landed. So we have this short window for an hour to an hour and 15 minutes where that particular group could have been some of the sightings. However, there were other sightings before, during, and after that in Raytown, Lee's Summit, and Kansas City, and Independence.
Hmm.
That had nothing to do with it.
And real quick, did you find out why there was a B-52 in the area, or a B-2?
Well, Whiteman Air Force Base, of course, is rather tight-lipped about that sort of thing. But one of my investigators called the air base, and they said they were running a yellow alert practice training session.
Ah.
And that they were going to be doing that during the month of October.
Okay.
So we do know that a couple of the reports were probably the B-2. And what we found out about that is the stealth, of course, usually flies with no lights on, because obviously they're trying to go in stealth mode.
Right.
But when they hit an area of high traffic, like over a major city, Kansas City, they turn their lights on so that other aircraft can see them, because they may not get them on radar. So this is to avoid any problems with other airplanes. So we do know that a couple of the sightings were from that. However, we had some people with very, very odd things happen at that time. One of them, I'll just name a few. A man in Lee's Summit was standing in his backyard, and these five very bright small balls of light about the size of softballs were in a wooded area behind his house, moving around. He was curious about them, and one of them came out into the yard and seemed to want to attract the attention of his dog, who then followed this object back into the woods, and then he was calling for his dog and calling for him. He finally came back. When the dog came back, it ran into the house and went under the table and hid. So it acted afraid of something. He doesn't know what happened to it in the woods, but he continued to watch these balls of light flit around in the woods for another 45 minutes and then take off. Another person in Lee's Summit over a major intersection saw a 60-foot diameter fireball right over her head over this intersection. She said 40 or 50 feet above her, and this flaming orange fireball, it just looked like fire. And she said she watched it for a few minutes, was in shock, didn't even think about grabbing a camera, and then this object moved off to the east. And what's kind of strange about all of these orbs or balls of light is that all of them were reported moving to the east when they went away out of sight. So we were thinking that there must have been something you know, perhaps they were probes of some sort. And of course, this is just speculation. And then we're going back to a craft. I don't know. But even more intriguing is these close encounters. In one instance, a woman saw a very large craft hovering right over a supermarket in Raytown, and she was standing in a parking lot just feet from this thing. And she said it was very large. It was lit up all over the bottom. It was a disc shape, and then it disappeared, and she stood just frozen in this parking lot watching this thing. We had other people with close encounters like that. And then as the month went on, we had a few reports here and there, and then October the 30th and 31st, we had the same thing happen. We had another flying team come out, and this is a different one with seven planes that flew over the Kansas City Chiefs Stadium, went back to the Lee Summit Airport in the same track, so we know the time. I called again, found out what time they left, what time they landed, and then again, outside of that, we have other situations with people seeing these large craft and close encounters over 435 Highway, you know, large intersections with multiple mass witnesses. It's just extremely incredible. It's kind of like the Phoenix Lights and the Stevensville incident, where you have all of these people seeing this at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Were they multiple witnesses describing, were their accounts similar as to the makeup of the craft they were talking about?
They were. Mm-hmm. There were some slight variations. As you know, different witnesses see different things.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, 90% of the descriptions are the same. In one case, I'll just mention this, on Halloween night, a family took a woman and her mother, took her two children trick-or-treating. They got in the car to go to this particular neighborhood where they knew a lot of people. And it was a sort of a planned thing that everybody does every year. Well, they were at the intersection of 291 and Colburn Road in Lee's Summit when they saw a UFO. And as they turned, the UFO seemed to follow them along 291 Highway. And then when they would come to a stoplight, it stopped. And when they started going again, it would go at the same rate of speed. Well, when they arrived at their neighborhood, they were an hour later than they thought they should have been. Because
wow.
A ride that should have taken 10 minutes took an hour. So they were a little confused about that. And she was confused because when she got out of the car, it was cool that evening, and she had the heater on in the car. But as they drove up to this house, she noticed that the car was really cold, like it hadn't been on at all.
Hmm.
So anyway, they get out of the car. The object by then had disappeared behind some buildings, and about 30 people were standing in the middle of the street, and some of them came running over and said, "Did you see that? Did you see that UFO?" And so she said, "Yes, I did. She thought they were the only ones who saw it." And as they're talking about it, it comes back and rises up over some buildings and comes right over their heads. And she said everybody was just standing there quiet and calm, just looking at this thing,
wow.
Not saying anything. Nobody was taking any pictures. And then she doesn't remember how it went away, how it left.
Hmm.
And she said it was almost like she's looking around watching these people like they're in a trance.
Wow. That's a very interesting sighting. Were you able to talk to other people that were there, some of those other 30 people?
Oh, no. Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
This woman I talked to, she's a nurse, and she knew everybody. She says, "Oh, yeah." She says, "We all saw the same thing. I'm going to have them contact you." And then I got back with her a couple days later. She says, "Nobody will talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it." She says, "When I ask them what they saw, they say, 'I don't know what I saw. I don't want to talk about it.'"
Wow.
And it's very strange. I'm still waiting and hoping that somebody will come around. Sometimes if you give people some time,
mm-hmm.
to kind of digest what they saw, when it's extremely strange like that, people have a tendency to want to block it or not want to believe that it happened and just push it out of their minds.
Mm-hmm.
But if you let them have a little time to digest that, then they'll talk about it later.
Wow, that's a really strange sighting. You know what it reminds me of, actually, is Dan Aykroyd's story about kind of a similar, where people in the middle of the night just got up and went outside and all had this UFO sighting, and he wanted to go outside. And but he didn't. His wife told him to stay in, and he regretted it because people had all seen this UFO. But it because it reminds me of, you know, this effect, this mass effect somehow. The object seems to be influencing the people somehow.
It does. Yeah, this is pretty common in among UFO witnesses that they do claim to feel calm, and then later they think about it and they think, well, why did I react like that? I think I should have run screaming away.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. So I believe you're right that the object itself or something that's emitted from it, a light or a beam or whatever type of energy, calms a person down and puts them in a trance state.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the woman who... The nurse in this case, who was observing everyone else when she was not in the trance state, although she didn't feel like panicking, but she was still in a more conscious state than the rest of them. She said she thinks that she was able to do that because she had been studying biofeedback and done meditation for years. So she had felt like she had more control over her conscious mind.
Hmm. So, and this was late October?
Yes, October 31st.
So that was the month where it all began for you guys. And did these sightings continue at a high level?
Yes, they continued at a much lower level than that month. I mean, for the state of Missouri, we had 95 for that month, and that was the highest reported anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then we still were receiving a number of, you know, more reports than normal for November and December. And then when January hit, we had cattle mutilation in Kansas City. And for me, this is the first one I had ever heard of outside of some anecdotal reports from 30 years ago. But this occurred near KCI Airport.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, sorry. Mm-hmm. Real quick, just before we leave the October events, I just wanted to ask one more question, which was the nature of the shapes of the objects that people were reporting. Was it similar or was it across the board, and what was the majority of what was being reported?
Well, the shapes that were being reported were a triangular craft, fireballs of different sizes.
Hmm.
A diamond-shaped craft over 435 Highway was reported in Missouri and Kansas, and disc shapes. So those are the main ones.
Okay, great. Thank you. So almost across the board there.
Well, yeah. Of course, there are a lot more to choose from, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people saw the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, great. So then there's this cattle mutilation in January near the airport.
Yes, and so I got to do my first cattle mutilation investigation, and I took a new investigator with me who is a policeman. So he had training in on-site evidence collection. And we met with the rancher, who was very busy and a little reluctant to let us investigate. He said he didn't want any publicity about it, and, you know, he was worried because he's leasing the land from KCI Airport, so he didn't want any problems there. So even the mention of a possibility of UFO was, you know, something we didn't want to say.
Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to investigate the case. So he let us in and then left. So we were free to investigate, and what had happened was they moved the cow. Because it was visible from the street. It was only like 30 feet from the street past the gate. And in order to discourage people from stopping by, because it was all over the news on all of our channels here. He moved the cow to another location that was out of sight. So immediately I was taken aback by the fact that this hard ground was indented in to the point where you could tell where the cow was laying, where its head was, its belly, and its hind end, and where its feet were. It was like something had dropped it from above to make this indentation. So that was the first thing that caught my eye. And so then I took some samples from inside this area where the cow had been found, and then a control sample 30 yards away of the soil. We took that and sent it in. Let me back up a little bit. So then the strange thing happened. This was unlevel ground, so I wasn't able to run around the whole ranch looking for this cow. The rancher had pointed to a place where it was there was a little indentation in the ground and trees around this creek. So my fellow investigator went out to the area where he pointed, and he calls me back on the phone, you know, because we're too far away from each other, but we could see each other. He says, "There's nothing here. I can't see anything." And I said, "Well, that's ridiculous." And this place wasn't that big, but he went to every single place. He just walked to the whole area in this fenced-in area looking for this cow, could not find it. So after an hour, it was freezing cold. I said, "No, we just have to leave. We'll call the rancher back." So I got home, emailed the rancher, and he says, "You guys weren't looking in the right. You were standing right there. Why didn't you see the cow?" And he said he was standing right there looking at it. So I just thought that was extremely bizarre. But anyway, so we never got to see the cow firsthand. And it had been several days, so really the evidence, was probably contaminated by that point. But I sent these samples in to Debbie Ziegelmeyer's brother, Chuck Zukowski, in Colorado, who is an expert on cattle mutilation investigations, or animal mutilations of all types. So he used a lab there. So he sent my samples in and also some samples from another case he had worked. And the results came back, surprisingly, that the soil in both cases had become more non-water soluble. So what that meant in layman's terms was the soil had been exposed to some very high temperatures. Only in those locations where the cows were found, not in the control samples. So here we have something very anomalous to go forward with other investigations. And we're going to have the same testing done whenever, another animal mutilation is found to see if this is a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Now, the rancher, was he the one who alerted the media? How did the media find out about it? And what about the cow made him curious, made him think that this wasn't done by a predator?
Well, no, he did not alert the media. The media got that from the police report.
Okay.
He had filed a police report. The veterinarian said that the cuts were extremely precise and had to be done by someone who knew what they were doing.
Wow.
So we have extremely precise cutting. And so the media was immediately jumped on it, and he was reluctant to talk to them. He wasn't real wild about that idea. But his friend and another rancher nearby, who I have not been able to get in touch with, I'm still working on that, got interviewed, and he said that he had experienced 3 cattle mutilations on his ranch not far from there 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So I'm still working on that.
And that is very unusual for a vet to be the one to call out the anomalous nature of the cuts on the cow. Typically, it's the vets who are debunking everything, and it's usually ranchers or law enforcement that think it's weird. So that's a very unique and helpful, because the vet, of course, is the expert. that they would say that. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And that's why it got a lot of publicity. People are still talking about that. I'd really like to get to the bottom of it.
Now, did you have any UFO sightings in the area around that time?
We only had a couple. Yeah, mm-hmm. We didn't have anything in that area. No, there weren't any that were close enough by to possibly be related.
Mm-hmm. And the area were there people or homes nearby?
Well, this is an area with ranches, so mm-hmm. they're quite far apart from each other.
Okay.
There wasn't anything else that was close to this.
Mm-hmm. And this was a land, you said, it was being leased from the airport.
Yes, the airport leases its land to the ranchers because the cows keep the grass down, mm-hmm. which keeps the deer out of the area because they're a problem on the runways.
Oh, I see. Wow, so that's a very interesting one.
Yes, it is, and I wasn't relishing the idea of looking at a dead animal, but
yeah.
I was excited about doing my first cattle mutilation investigation. It's just very strange that my partner, who has training in investigations as a police officer, did not see that cow when it was right in front of him.
Yeah, that is very weird. What do you think of that?
I don't know what to think. I don't believe that it was anything to do with him. I just kind of think something didn't want him to see it.
Mm-hmm. So January, that's getting into 2012. So did the sightings continue into this year?
They have. We've had more than normal. I just did a check yesterday for Jackson County only, and that's Kansas City area. And we have had 15 sightings since January 1st. We're still at higher than normal and still having more bizarre sightings of globes of light, orbs. In one case, a woman shined a flashlight on one of these orbs that was traveling through her yard, and it was transparent. She could see light going through it.
Wow.
These are just strange. They're blue in color. Orange is the most prevalent color. White. In one case, green. In one case, black. This occurred in October. I'll just go back to October for a second on this black orb because it's so strange. There was a woman and her son exiting onto Nolan Road from I-70. Lee Summit Road. In Independence, and she stopped at this intersection, and there were no other cars around, but this black basketball-sized orb, only inches above the ground, just floated along the middle of the street, and as they watched it for a few seconds, watched this thing pass slowly by, then it just disappeared in thin air. That
wow.
one is one of the more bizarre ones. But continuing into 2012, we're having mostly the balls of light, orange orbs, all, acting in strange manner at treetop level or ground level, very close sightings. So that's very unusual.
Mm-hmm. So now that it's been a few months looking back on this flap in October, is there anything you can make of it?
Well, that's what I'm working on. I'm putting together a lot of things, thinking the question, why Kansas City? What's so interesting here? So what do we have here that's interesting? Well, we've got three fault lines coming in here that nobody knows about. We had an earthquake in Kansas City in November, I believe, which was highly unusual. Nobody living now has ever felt that.
Hmm.
It was a 5.6, and that was the fault line coming from Oklahoma to Nebraska, and was just a few miles west of Kansas City. And it shook the house. I mean, it was quite an event.
Wow.
And the previous earthquake to that that was felt in Kansas City was in 1859. So, and then I found there's a fault underneath Raytown, and there's a fault line coming from the New Madrid Fault that goes up underneath Richards Gebauer Air Base in Grandview, which is just south of Kansas City. And then we have this odd missing baby Lisa case, which happened in the middle of the night. And I had an odd feeling about that from the beginning. I did try to contact the police and the parents, and they would not respond to me. I did a remote view of it, and what I saw was something come in through the window, floating above the ground, not touching the ground like you would see a person walking. And at that point, I didn't think it was a person. And then scooped this child up with the left arm only, which is not how you pick a baby up, and walk out the front door. Well, I had known this, and I was, you know, I really wanted to get in touch with the parents and maybe go into that room so that I could get a clearer view of what had happened, because that's my specialty, is looking at the past, things that happened in the past, so I can watch it like a movie. And it's easier if I'm in the spot. But anyway, that's what I saw. And then months later, I heard from someone that they saw on the news during all of this. It was a very high profile. It was on the news every night. Two little boys claimed that they saw a monster carrying the baby into the woods.
Huh.
And that just gave me the creeps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, the stories of fairies carrying babies off, especially in Ireland, England, Scotland, they have these traditions where, you know, they talk about this sort of thing. And, you know, what if these fairies were ETs? It just makes you think about some old stories, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it, you know, there were no witnesses, there was no evidence, there was no footprints. This case is very bizarre. And why were we having the flying teams at the same time, the B-2 at the same time, these close encounters? I've got some people with missing time, some possible abduction scenarios. There's just no answer at this point.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, the Baby Lisa event, you've done this helping with missing people before. Is this the first time you've had this sort of experience where you felt this, you know, an entity hovering, taking the victim?
Yes, absolutely. It is the first time, and it really kind of shook me up to sense this.
Mm-hmm. And you called it remote viewing. So I wanted to ask, you know, kind of the process you go through when you help out on an investigation. Have you always called it remote viewing? Is that when you learned about remote viewing, is it similar, I guess? And what do you feel about the victims?
Well, I have not always called it remote viewing. I've only done that the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing. Being psychic is, you know, sending your consciousness out to a place at a certain time. I mean, you can ask to go in the past, present, or future, and you know, it's just a different term. What happens is somebody gets in touch with me. They say there's someone missing. Can you help? And I will tell them to only give me the person's name. And nothing else. And usually I can tune in to them by hearing a vibration of their name.
Hmm.
That's how I tune in. If I'm still not able to do it, then I will ask for a location where they live, the address or, you know, something that will give me an indication. And then I can usually get them. And I don't want to know anything else because I don't want to be contaminated by any extraneous information. And then I'll I will see the event, and I'll see other people around. It's just like watching a movie. And I'll see what happened. Sometimes I'll hear names being spoken. And then sometimes I'll see after an event what the perpetrator has done and where they've gone. In one case, a homicide case I worked on for someone in Iowa, this school teacher had been murdered. And the detective didn't give me any information except her name and address. And what I saw was before the event, I see this young man in his 20s walking up to her door. She's home alone. He knocks on the door, and she opens the door, and he talks her into letting him in. Well, she knew him, and he had been a student in one of her classes. She was a teacher, and she knew he was trouble, but she certainly was not aware how bad this guy was. And he had a gun, and he made her go upstairs to a safe that was not her safe. I knew she didn't own it, but she opened it, and there was $10,000 in there that she didn't own, belonged to someone else, and she gave it to this man. And she's still not thinking that he's really, you know, going to hurt her, but he told her to go back out into the hall and go down the steps, and at that time, he shot her in the back of the head. And then she fell to her left, crushing her ribs on the stair rail, and then fell down the steps. Well, as I'm telling the detective this, he was completely silent, and I said, "Are you there?" He goes, "Yes." I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "You are scaring me." That because everything I told him was absolutely true. The money was not hers. It was her husband's. The safe where it was located, the crushed ribs, and the getting shot in the back of the head. So I said, "Well, do you want to know more?" He goes, "Yeah." So I see this guy leave. I see him then the next day at a trailer with a canopy over it. And I see he's working underneath his car, which just has a gunmetal gray primer on it. And I got the type of the car, the license number. And a woman came out and called his name, so I heard his name. And then a man pulled up that was, the man was his brother. And they both said their names, so I got their names. And then I saw where he left, and he went to St. Louis, and then he went to Seattle. And I saw the name of the bar and a woman he was talking to in the bar. So this detective, he says, "I have never talked to anybody so accurate in my life." He says, I usually don't do this, but I'm going to go follow this lead." And I said, "Well, you know, if you need help, give me a call." So he did, and a couple of weeks later, he had got the guy. And he called me.
In Seattle?
In Seattle.
Wow.
They had alerted the Seattle police, and they followed this trail, and they had the license number and car description and everything, and they got him. And this has been the case in all the cases I've worked. All of them have been solved except two.
Wow. So, yeah, and this is not a small amount, 40 cases you've been able to help with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I think it's more than that now, but yes. And if people would call me right away, that's the thing. I've only had one case turn out to be positive where the person was found alive. And that's because they called me immediately. They knew me personally. And this was a group of women that I had been doing some readings for, which I don't do anymore because I don't have time. But she called me and said her niece was missing. And I was able to locate her, and they went to the spot, and they found her alive, tied up in the back, in a shed in the back. And this was a group of people that were into white slavery.
Oh, geez.
So,
wow,
yeah.
That's really fascinating. And I guess when it comes to the remote viewing, and I could see, you know, why you'd use that term, because I'm sure it was invented because it's a more friendly term. It doesn't carry the baggage that, you know, the psychic term does.
Yeah.
So has that helped you ever in your UFO investigations?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What I do in order to, since I have so many reports come in and I'm busy, I don't want to waste my time on hoaxes. So when I'm talking to somebody on the phone, when I hear them talk, that vibration, I can tell if they're telling me the truth or not.
Hmm.
So right there, that saves me a load of time. but the fact is most people are telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then I'll, you know, do the investigation. And while I'm talking to them, I will re-experience that. And I'll actually see what they saw. So I know for a fact, I mean, in my mind, of course, I have no way to prove this to someone else what I'm seeing. But I know what the event was.
Mm-hmm.
So that does help. Of course, I don't tell people that I do that. Because, you know, it might scare people off. You don't know what kind of reaction you're going to get, how open-minded they are. And a lot of people are traumatized by the event. They don't need to have anything else added to that.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever then felt that you've been able to get an idea about, let's say, the occupants of one of these vehicles?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see what they look like. I can telepathically pick up what they're thinking and what their purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say this. A lot of times, though, I can't. And they'll see me. It's almost like, okay, for a remote viewer, you send your consciousness somewhere, but it's like you're standing there. So these beings, most of them are so aware and so much further advanced than we are that they know immediately if I'm in there remote viewing them. And they will turn and look at me and give me a dirty look a lot of times or say, get out, or they'll put a block up so I can't see. So, you know, but other times I've been able to observe without them doing anything, even if they do see me.
And so what is it that they're up to, that the impressions you're getting there?
Well, several things. There are some groups who were displaced on their own planets and needed a place to go, and they're here. And most of them live underground, underwater. Some of them walk among us. There are some other groups who just want to completely exploit the Earth for our resources and minerals. And there are some who are guardians, who watch over and try to stop anybody who means any negative harm to us personally or to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many, many different types that are here for different reasons. Some of them are doing genetic research. Some of them are trying to save their own species by using us, using the women of our planet to procreate, and the men too as well. You know, there's just many, many different agendas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I mean, that's kind of a real, like, the Men in Black movie scenario with lots of different types, some resident here and some visiting for various reasons.
It is. The Men in Black movies are so accurate, it's not even funny.
Uh-huh.
I think they've been doing some, probably some intimate contact with ETs on this.
So as far as the different types, I mean, does that vary as well? I mean, it sounds like walking among us, that would be humanoid type creatures, and then of course there's the grays, which we're all familiar with. Are there other types?
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah, the reptilians.
Mm-hmm.
Several different types of reptilians, the mantis, and in my own experience, and this is just for me, I was introduced to a mantis being a few years ago, And during a regression, I saw many lifetimes ago that this being came to me and became my guardian. And his purpose is to enlighten people and help open their minds and help use their physical body and their other bodies, spiritual, etheric, astral body, etc., and advance our species. And they pick some of us to do that. And, I happen to be one of them. So, he told me that at certain times, and this is starting many lifetimes ago, there were timed events that would occur, and I'd be given new gifts. So in this lifetime, that has just exponentially increased every year. It used to be that I'd be given a new talent, every 5 years, 7 years. Then it was once a year. Well, when I turned 50, 6 years ago, it suddenly became every 3 months. And so now the latest thing that I've done is, and I'm still in shock over it, is channeling. And I channeled some type of entity, a being, who said he lived many years ago and asked if he could channel. And this was during a meeting with a group of other ET experiencers who are also psychics, who have also been given these gifts by ETs. And this only happened 3 weeks ago. I'd never met these people before in my life, but we all got together and we did a seminar for the public. And then we got together privately and we did readings for each other. Well, this entity came to me and said, "Can I speak through you?" And I said, I asked the group if it was okay. They said, "Sure." And they put their recorders on. Well, I channeled this Native American language, which, of course, I don't have any exposure to. So I have no idea what this being said through me. But two of the ladies there are Native American, and they said, "That sounds like Blackfoot." Well, you ask the entity if it's Blackfoot, and it said, told me yes. Well, I'm thinking, why didn't it just speak in English so everybody could understand? I don't know, but this is what happened. And I was just doubting myself all along, thinking, this is the first time I've channeled something. And I honestly, when I've seen other people do it, I didn't really believe it. I thought it was fake. Anyway, I got some results yesterday, and part of it has been translated by a chief of the Blackfoot tribe. And what it said was rather disturbing. And I need to tell you what, I was also having a vision at the same time this was occurring. And the vision was of the Missouri River and the Mississippi River, and these two big yellow arrows were coming in to the center of the state of Missouri, and I heard a voice say, "The people are moving away from the rivers." And by the people, I knew that this person meant Native Americans were moving away from the rivers inland. And what we had been talking about before was several visions I've had of the New Madrid Fault and the Mississippi and the Missouri River spilling out and causing major, major flooding and major problems and, just all kinds of destruction in St. Louis and Memphis and Nashville. I've been seeing these visions for 3 years. Well, that had been the discussion. So I got the translation back yesterday. They've done only part of it. And it says, "At the time of the great shaking, the location will be where the two angry rivers meet."
That does not bode well for Kansas City.
No, it doesn't. Or for St. Louis or the other cities there, I believe that they mean where the Missouri and the Mississippi meet.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bode well for any of us. So and I do, I, you know, I'm not a fear monger. I don't like to talk about things like this. But at this point, after 3 years of this going on, and this translation in a language, of course, I could not have any exposure to, and it turns out to be this, I just urge people to be prepared for anything, which is smart anyway.
So this entity, do you think it was extraterrestrial?
I know. I think it was Native American, but I can't be sure because he did not give me his name. I just felt this benevolent being. And I'm honestly, I've got to try it again. So we'll see what happens.
So, and when you do this channeling, is it sometimes then, I guess, disembodied entities or people who have passed away?
Well, no, this is the first time I channeled. Anything I have a lot of experience with. It just happened.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Now, usually what happens is when I speak to the dead, they speak to me and I relay the information. It's like I'm standing, you know, you're standing in front of me speaking, and I relay it. But this came through me in another language, and just it spoke. I didn't.
Wow. That's got to be quite an experience.
It was. It was. I'm still, you know, kind of reeling from that.
So then does it make you reexamine some of the other channeling you've heard before?
Yes. Now I'm thinking, you know, I was probably wrong. Many of these people are really channeling.
What makes it difficult, and we'll see if you've ran across this as well, is that there are so many different messages. Not that I even necessarily doubt that people are really channeling, but the messages don't seem to be completely consistent, and this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And that's something I struggle with. I wonder why that is.
Well, I do too, and I think several things are going on. You've got messages coming in from different entities, and it's going to be their take on, if we're talking about future events. But then also, you have the possibility of different timelines and different dimensions. So you could have this different results come out on different timelines. I mean, this is something that's just now being talked about in mainstream science. You know, is extra dimensions and different timelines. But, you know, there are many of us who have known that that's existed for a long time. There, you know, I experienced some things myself where I actually saw myself twice in my lifetime, saw myself doing something, and it was definitely me, and I'm observing it. You know, there was, so the only thing I can say is that had to be a crossover into another timeline or another dimension.
Right. Interesting. I guess finally, you know, we're running out of time in the last couple of minutes. I did want to ask you about, because you do a lot of other paranormal investigation. You have a ghost hunting field guide book that you've written. Haunted Independence is another one of your books. And I guess the similarities, there are so many crossovers between ghost hunting, I'll call it, and UFO investigations, not just the technologies that are used about like the electromagnetic forces, but also, you know, even with the channeling. Sometimes it's a ghost when people feel that they're communicating with other entities. Sometimes it's an extraterrestrial. What do you make of that, the similarities between these two areas of paranormal investigation?
Well, there are many similarities, and I talk about them in the Ghost Hunters Field Guide, and that's on my website at margiek.com. I took a look at this, you know, an approach to this book a little bit differently. And as an open psychic working with the paranormal, and I even mentioned UFOs in this, but the commonalities are that we're working with entities that are of a different vibration, but they seem to move in and out of our world at will. And in communicating with both of these different types of entities, the people, you know, the dead who have passed over, and aliens, they move in the fifth dimension. So the they're still the aliens, though, even go to higher dimensions. So, but they have to move through the fifth to get down to us in the third, fourth dimension. So the dead have told me that they see aliens passing through, but they don't interact on their plane at the fifth dimension. And the other thing is that it's very, very common for people who have had UFO experiences to also have paranormal experiences. So you cannot discount the fact that these things are related, and anybody who's investigating either the paranormal or UFOs needs to be investigating both, in my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah, because unfortunately, you know, you have it on both sides. It's kind of worse with, like, the Bigfoot area, where they don't believe in any of the others. Where, and then you have a lot of ghost hunters who, you know, don't believe in UFOs, and UFO investigators who don't want anything to do with ghost hunting, which is frustrating because I love it all. And I know Debbie and Chuck, who you referred to earlier, I've gone and investigated with them on all of these arenas. But, yeah, it seems important. And it's interesting what you mentioned here, because it's like, well, just like it's called an extrasensory perception, where you're perceiving these other realms and then these other what you call dimensions. Then you have visibility or awareness of both of these types of phenomena. And I've heard in a channeling, and I always, you know, it's difficult with channeling because there's so many messages, but the entities being extraterrestrial or claiming to be, and saying that they can see these other things as well. They don't know what they're doing. They don't interact with them or communicate, but they can sense them or see, you know, a ghost floating through, and they don't know what it's up to. But what a strange perception that would be. And of course, if we're moving to that, where we have this ability, and some people do already, it seems, how strange it would be to have all of these other entities, you know, around, and you don't know what they're up to.
Well, yes. People in general are becoming more aware. And I've been told that this is the movement from our dimension to fifth dimension. And we're actually going to be moving over this cusp on December 21st, 2012. We will be in the fifth dimension at that point. And so people need to be prepared for seeing a lot more than they used to. I really think that they're going to actually see UFOs hovering right over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, that everybody's going to be aware that of much more.
And where do you get that information?
From my ET buddies.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And why that date?
Well, because that is where we're going to be at the certain position we are in the galaxy, lining up with the center of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, you know, and this happens every, I believe, 26,000 years, that we have this opportunity to move to another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that it seriously is what's happening.
And do you believe then, or have they told you that they had informed the Mayans of this information?
No, I didn't ever ask that question specifically, but I'm certain that it's related.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we start a new age. Well, yeah, we're going to start a new age in another dimension.
Wow. Interesting. I don't know if I'm ready. I better pack my bags. Can my chihuahua come?
I don't think that that's going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to see a lot more around us. And I was actually shown a vision of that, where everybody can see the energy fields around people, see the colors, and see the connection between themselves, these lines of connection, and everything else. And so because of this, we're just not going to have any more war or fighting, which would be nice.
Yeah, that's a very nice thought. All right, well, we are essentially out of time, but this has been a really interesting discussion. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And MargieK.com is where people need to go. Find out more.
Yes, and also MissouriMUFON.org to find out about our conference and other things we have coming up.
All right, you've got a conference May 20th.
Yes, May 20th in Kansas City with some big names.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Margie Kay, so very interesting woman who's done a lot of cool stuff out there in Missouri. MargieK.com is where you find out more about her and her books and her work. Thank you so much for being on the show, Margie. That is it. Remember, all of that cool news that we read, you can find at UFODailyNews.com. And you can read my new writer. Thank you, Robert Cole. So I'm real excited about that. Speaking of contributions from listeners, you might have noticed I have some new clothes music, and I want to thank Pablo Andres Vivas for sending me that. Let's check it out right now. Talk to you next week, people.